This is Ahval Online, meeting point of accurate news and free comment on the current affairs of Turkey. Welcome to our podcast series.
Hello and welcome to Talking Turkey. I'm your host, Ahval editor David Lepeska, and with me today is Bestun Khalid, independent journalist and Kurdish affairs analyst based in Süleymaniye in northern Iraq. Hello, Bestun, and thanks for joining us.
Hello, David, and thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. We are speaking on Monday, June 29, nearly 2 weeks after Turkey airlifted commando forces into northern Iraq to go after the Kurdistan Workers Party, or PKK, which has been waging an insurgency within Turkey for more than 3 decades and is known to be headquartered in the Kandil Mountains of northern Iraq. On Saturday, this past Saturday, Turkey said its special forces had killed or captured 9 militants of the PKK, which I should mention is labeled a terrorist group by Turkey, as well as the United States and the European Union. The Turkish airstrikes have also reportedly struck around Süleymaniye and in Yazidi and Christian areas and near refugee camps and killed a number of civilians in recent days. Responding to all this on Twitter, Bestun, you called for the creation of a system by which Kurdish civilians in Iraq and maybe neighboring countries as well could lodge their complaints domestically and internationally and receive some measure of justice. Please tell us, if you would, how you see that system working, and more broadly, what has been the response to Turkey's incursion among the people in Iraq's Kurdistan region?
First of all, I'd like to mention that we should not look at this offensive as an independent offensive, like something special. Because this has been continuously, that Turkey from its establishment has been continuously targeting the Kurds inside Turkey since 1920s. Basically, we can very easily say that the modern Turkish Republic was built as a nation state, a Turkish nation state, which denied the Kurdish identity. And Turkey, throughout the last century, continued to target the Kurds under different names and using very different strategies, starting from education. Turkish curriculum, Turkish educational curriculum, teaches everyone that anybody who lives in Turkey is a Turk, no other identity. Students from very early ages are forced to repeat these sentences every morning in the classrooms and in the schoolyards. They are forced to say, how much lucky I am to be able to say that I am a Turkish. And think about students from the Kurdish areas of Turkey, when they go to the first classes at school, they don't even know Turkish. They don't know Turkish because they don't speak. Their families, their parents don't speak Turkish. They speak Kurdish in their homes.
Well, yes, and then worse than that is they are then unable to speak the language they know in school.
And when they go to school, they are not allowed to speak Kurdish.
Right.
Look at this big catastrophe. How would this affect on the psychology of these kids? And think about that. At least 3 generations or 4 generations has been raised this way in Turkey. And now, this is only about education. Think about all of those mountains in Kurdistan of Turkey. On all of the mountains, the same words are like written on the, like graffitis. There are graffitis on the mountains, which
graffiti, yes.
Yeah, which says how much lucky you are if you're able to, you're a Turk. Think about this. And militarily, Turkey has fought against the Kurds who have asked for their rights. Just go back to 1925. When Kurdish
right. I mean, we could go into the context for hours. I know, but let's try to focus a little bit on this. What's going on in northern Iraq?
Yeah, that's exactly the context. So basically, today Unfortunately, Turkey has exported this struggle to neighboring countries, not only Turkey, inside Turkey, but now, as you remember, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, Turkey launched a offensive against the Kurds in Syria, in northern Syria, in Rojava. And now Turkey is using PKK as a reason to launch these offensives against Kurdistan region of Iraq. Let me tell you something. Civilians were killed in the recent attacks by Turkey, and 6 civilians were injured. And it was a picnic area, right, like less than 20 miles away from where I live. So when you see this, you understand that this struggle is not only against the PKK, which is labeled as a terrorist organization by Turkey, but also a struggle against the Kurds.
But we could say, could we say that, could we say with confidence that there are no PKK in that area?
Well, the PKK bases are very clear where they are. Like, just go to Turkey, ask anybody, where are the headquarters or what the main bases of PKK? Everybody is going to tell you it's in Kandil. So this area is a place where people live. It's a village. So and it's a resort that tourists go there for having fun. I'm sure you have watched that video of this family inside a pond trying to teach their kids how to swim. So when you hit this place, and when your Minister of Foreign Affairs tells the public that Soleimani is under the control of PKK, which is labeled as a terrorist organization by Turkey, which means Mr. Çavuşoğlu is telling the public that Soleimani is under the control of terrorism. At this point, and when the Turkish media targets Mr. Barzani and trying to give this idea that he is in a some sort of collaboration with PKK just because of his promoting a Kurdish-Kurdish, intra-Kurdish dialogue in northern Syria. In this case, you make your intention clear that you're fighting against the whole Kurds, not only a rebel group, which you label them as a
But wait, to be honest, it's just totally, I don't understand what, if Turkey knows that there are no PKK in this area and that their airstrikes here would just hit civilians, there's no good reason to do that. You will only be creating more militants, more enemies. Like, so what's the good message there? What use is that to Turkey? Well, I don't understand. Okay. It's just a mistake, maybe?
So basically, in the picnic area, there was an armed person who later on, PKK announced that, or in fact, PJAK announced that he was a militant of PJAK. He was a PJAK fighter. So PJAK is also another rebel group affiliated with PKK. Uh-huh. But basically, yeah, this person was driving a pickup, and Turkey has very good technology to be able to follow up this person and hit this pickup vehicle in a place where civilians would not be infected.
So, I see.
But when you do this, basically what the public sees here in Kurdistan, what an ordinary citizen feels is that Turkey is trying to give this message to the whole Kurds, like, this is a threat for all of you. This is how ordinary citizens feel today in Kurdistan. So basically Turkey has a strategy of giving this feeling to the whole Kurds that they are not safe unless they are under the control of Turkey. Turkey has further a strategy of creating a buffer zone between the Kurdish between Turkey and Iraq, like border where the Kurds live. There are two important things to mention here. First of all, Turkey, by using this, by targeting Soleimani and saying that Soleimani is under the control of PKK, by targeting civilians, by targeting Masoud Barzani for his contentness of the Syrian Kurds to come to a consensus. Turkey is trying to criminalize the whole Kurds. If you say, for example, Soleimani is a city where more than 1.5 million people live. If you say this city is under of a terrorist organization, in quotation, so in this point, you're criminalizing 1.5 million people and you give a right to yourself to bomb this city. So this is number one objective of Turkey. And number two, this is how.
Wait, can I just ask something about that? So wait, you think that's what pushed Turkey to launch these operations into Iraq right now because it has this kind of buffer zone in Syria? It's now thinking maybe we can do the same thing in Iraq?
Yeah, that's the number two objective. They are trying to. Turkey is planning to create a buffer zone and split the Kurdish geography, let's say. Like, you know, these borders were just drew by people who did not know about the reality on the ground, these borders in Middle East. So there are villages, which half of the village is inside Iraq and half of the village is inside Turkey. The same as the villages, which half of it is inside Turkey and half of it is inside Syria. But like two different countries. However, the people are families, are relatives, and they on the both sides of the border they speak the same language. There is a fear among the people here in Kurdistan that Turkey is planning to use Syrian militants to create a buffer zone in this area, and
as
also
it did in Libya,
as they did it in Libya, because and bring in Sunni Arabs and Turkmens from Syria, and try to build new villages, new places for those people to live there, and divide the Kurds. So that there will not be a communication between the Kurds in Iraq and the Kurds in Turkey.
This buffer zone you talk about, let me just ask, sorry. I've read that there are already, for the last few years, Turkey has established several observation posts in northern Iraq. Is that true? How many are there? And kind of does that mean that Turkey has some kind of presence already and some control in northern Iraq?
Turkey has some bases inside Kurdistan region of Iraq. There have been here for more than 20 years, 25 years maybe. However, these bases do not have a control on the ground. But if this offensive, let's say, completes its mission, and when you go back and look at the Turkish media, you see that the Turkish media is clearly saying that the objective of these offensives is to stay in this area. And also, I'd like to draw your attention to something that right now Turkish troops has entered some villages. In the Iraqi side of the border in Zahor, and some of these villages are Christian villages. Do you know that about 9 to 10 Christian villages are now evacuated because Turkish troops are now inside their villages, and around the area there are clashes, and those people have been displaced to other areas of Kurdistan. So it's the first time that Turkey is practicing some sort of creating control on the ground in Iraqi Kurdistan region.
So wait, just to be clear, this hasn't happened before. This is unprecedented. What Turkey's doing right now in Iraq?
Turkey has, like years ago, and it has continuously conducted operations against PKK inside Kurdistan region,
right,
of Iraq.
Right.
But, and sometimes also ground operations.
Yes.
But in most cases, they had a specific mission, and after that specific mission, they have withdrew. But this time, there is an understanding from the Turkish, from what we see in the Turkish media and what we see on the ground, that Turkey is this time likely to stay here, not to leave the areas in which Turkish troops right now holds the control. And there is this fear among the people that the control of those areas may be then handed over to Syrian jihadist militants, with Turkey having control points to protect them, which is a big threat to the security and safety of the whole region.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned Turkish media earlier. I heard that you had an interview last week with a pro-government anchor in Turkey, Cüneyt Özdemir, and that much of your comments afterward were then censored or deleted. Please tell us what happened in that interview and kind of what this means to you about Turkey's kind of messaging and pro-government media and how they work in regards to the Kurds.
Exactly. The question here to ask is how Cüneyt Özdemir gave me the chance to give a voice to these civilian casualties rather than asking about why later on he censored my words. Because everybody knows about the situation in Turkey is when it comes to the freedom of speech and freedom of expression. However, when I was on Cüneyt Özdemir's show, I talked about the civilians who were targeted by Turkish army and Turkish airstrikes, and then I also mentioned about how the people here in Iraqi Kurdistan region feel about these operations. And hours after the interview, my words were totally, the section of my interview was totally deleted from Cüneyt Özdemir's YouTube channel. However, this had a reverse impact because people on Twitter started to ask questions about what did this Kurdish journalist say to Özdemir that forced Özdemir to delete his interview. And like the Turkish people on the Turkish users on Twitter, because of this, learned about the civilian casualties. And this was very, this had a very huge impact on the Turkish public, because like earlier when Turkey was targeting civilians in Iraqi Kurdistan or in Rojava region of Syria, in most cases, the Turkish public would not be able to get the information. There were no information flow to Turkey. So as a result of this, we saw the Turkish Minister of Defense releasing a statement in which he said Turkey would never target civilians because, according to the to what the Turkish Minister of Defense said, he considers Kurds as brothers of Turks, and they would never target Kurdish civilians. But later on, Iraqi presidency released a statement in which they mentioned the civilian casualties and invited Turkey to stop their operations.
So you're saying, though, that the censorship backfired and it led to more attention on this issue.
Censorship backfired.
The Iraqi government has condemned Turkey's incursion and expressed fears that it's been carried out in coordination with Iran, which reportedly shelled part of the Kandil Mountains just as Turkey's offensive got underway. What's your view? Is Turkey coordinating with Iran in northern Iraq, even as it faces off against the Iran-backed forces of Bashar Assad in neighboring Syria? And if so, what does that mean? What are the implications of that?
Well, I don't have any data in hand to prove this, but just going back to the historical context, we can easily understand that whenever it comes to the Kurds, Turkey, Iran, and any other forces like Iraq and Iran, Syria and Turkey, they always have a consensus on fighting against the Kurds. So this is also the same thing inside Turkey. Inside Turkey, there are different political parties with different political views. Even we have seen the CHP, the main opposition party in Turkey, was against Turkey sending troops to Libya. But whenever it comes to Kurds, all of the Turkish parties inside Turkey, except for pro-Kurdish HDP, which is again criminalized and its co-leader is right now in prison in Turkey, they all come together to consensus to all fight together against the Kurds. And it's this. So this is also tells us about a censorship on politics as well in Turkey. It's not only on media. You cannot be a political party and have a different view, say that, well, it's not a good idea to conduct airstrikes against Iraqi Kurdistan region because civilians are dying because of this. Again, even if Turkey and Iran has never been in an agreement on anything, when it comes to fighting against the Kurds, they can come to a consensus. We have seen this in many times during the modern history. The same with Iran and Iraq in 1975, when they came to a consensus against the Kurdish rebel groups. And you have seen these countries who do not agree on many things, when it comes to the Kurds, they agree. So, well, it's not easy to prove it today that Turkey is doing this offensives in coordination with Iran, but the historical context tells us, yes, it's mostly probable.
You mentioned the Kurdish party in Turkey, so I'll ask about that. Last week, Turkey convicted 68 Kurdish politicians on terrorism charges. Most are from the pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party, or HDP, which, as you mentioned, the Turkish government has criminalized because of its supposed links to the PKK. Some observers say this linkage is mainly a way for Erdogan's ruling Justice and Development Party, or AKP, to oppress and marginalize the party, which it has done by dismissing more than 100 of its mayors and jailing its charismatic former co-leader, Selahattin Demirtas. Last week, an academic I spoke to acknowledged the links between the HDP and the PKK, pointing out that many or even most PKK militants came from the ranks of HDP supporters, for instance. And this undermines the HDP's stated goal of being an agent of democratization. The academic I spoke to, Gunesh Tezgür, argued that barring the total elimination of the PKK, like its total destruction by Ankara and Turkish forces, or the completion of a peace process in Turkey, two things that seem quite unlikely anytime soon. He said that barring those two things, the HDP would have very little chance of delinking itself from the PKK in the minds of the Turkish public. Would you agree? And if that's the case, does that mean that the HDP is doomed to attract no more than 10, 11% of the vote, or maybe even start losing support?
Well, basically, if you focus on the area, on the people who live in the Kurdish areas of Turkey, this will help you to see the dilemma better. Basically, there are families whose one of their sons is a PKK fighter, and another son is a soldier in the Turkish army, because like all citizens of Turkey should do the should go to army
male,
or, yeah,
all male citizens,
yeah, all citizens, yeah, for 1 year and a half. So there are families whose sons are fighting against each other. In this case, when you see this social content or context, you cannot make a distinguish between between who is the PKK and who is not the PKK. And this is not the right way to read the thing. The right way to read the thing is that PKK is a result of the Turkish oppression and the Turkish fight against the Kurds for almost one century. In this case, the right way to deal the case is to understand that there is a Kurdish issue in Turkey. And if Turkey solves this issue, then Turkey will not be in need to fight against PKK. So if there is if the Kurdish issue in Turkey will be solved, there would no place will be left for PKK to survive. At this point, basically, if Turkey stops fighting Kurds, then it will not need to fight PKK. HDP has been very clear from the first day that they are against war and they are looking for political solution, and they are using the civil ways and the politics and diplomacy to serve all Turkey, not only the Kurdish areas of Turkey, and also to democratize Turkey. So the charge against HDP and Selahattin Demirtas, these are a result of the criminalization strategy by the AKP, not a result of the social, let's say, connection of the people, the supporters of HDP, who are also the people who live in the Kurdish areas of Turkey. So remember, some years ago, Turkey was working on a dialogue with PKK, and HDP played an important role in that process.
So during the peace process, yes. Peace
process, yeah. So at that time, no one was putting HDP members into prison. They were not charging Demirtas for terrorism charges, and he was not in prison. So the fact is not that HDP has an organic connection with PKK. The fact is that Turkey's propaganda machine is very, or Turkish state's propaganda machine is very strong, that has created this image of HDP having its roots in PKK, which is labeled by Turkey as a terrorist organization. And after creating this image, they are using this image, which is created by themselves, to put the pro-Kurdish HDP politicians into prison. So the whole thing is fabricated, in fact.
Now turning to Syria, last week a Turkish drone strike killed three civilian women near Kobani in northeast Syria, according to Muslim Kobani, head of the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF, which, of course, partnered with the United States in the fight against the Islamic State. A few hours after the Turkish drone strike, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo tweeted out his sympathies for the innocent Kurdish civilians killed, presumably because the United States is still partnered today with the SDF, even though Trump promised Turkish President Erdogan last October that the U.S. would cut ties with the SDF to allow Turkey to move in and take some Syrian territory, which it then did. The United States remains allied with the SDF, but because of its alliance with Turkey, it does not openly support Kurdish political goals in Syria, such as the strengthening and stabilizing of the Kurdish enclave Rojava, which is overseen by the SDF's political arm. Prominent Syrian Kurdish political figures like Ilham Ahmed and Maslum Kobani or Abdi visited Washington last fall and met with top U.S. officials, even including Trump. And the SDF, as I said, continues to cooperate with U.S. forces in fighting the remnants of the Islamic State and protecting oil fields in the region. I wonder, Bastou, do you think anything has happened in the past 8-9 months that has altered the U.S. view of Rojava and Kurdish autonomy and political goals in Syria? Or do you think the U.S. partnership is still, the U.S. partnership with the SDF is still just temporary and tactical?
Well, unfortunately, the partnerships of the United States or even some European countries with the Kurds has not been a permanent alliance with the Kurds, but only tactical partnerships due to the needs at that specific time and because of specific reasons. Today, SDF is a partner with the United States of America because the SDF played a very important role in the fight against ISIS. So, but when it comes to the relations between Turkey and the United States of America, we see that they are two NATO allies and they have been practicing good relations for decades. Although Turkish-American relations were facing troubles in last few months, I mean, before the last developments. But now we see that now Turkey and the United States have similar missions in Libya, which helps Turkey to make use of its alliance with the United States to complete his mission or its missions against the Kurds in Syria. What I think for the Kurds to both in Syria and in Iraqi Kurdistan region, and also the Kurds in Turkey and Iran, they have to see, the whole Kurds have to see that the partnerships of or the support from the United States in most cases are tactical partnerships, and they have to deal with these partnerships this way, not to feel safe just because of these partnerships. The best thing for the Kurds to do is to unite all together and have a more strong voice, and with this unity and stronger voice, having ability to communicate with the whole countries in the world, including the United States, the European Union, Russia, and China, and for the Kurds to be able to sit down on these tables and ask for more from each of these international actors.
Well, it sounds like you're saying that the SDF has maybe put too much faith into its alliance right now with the United States. If that's the case, what happens then to the SDF and particularly to Rojava if and when U.S. forces leave?
Yeah, that's going to be a big challenge for the Kurds in Syria, because just remember when the United States forces withdrew from Serekani and Grespi, we saw that the Turkish troops getting in
last fall. Serekani. I think you mean last
fall. Yeah, yes. It was last fall. So it's going to be a very big challenge. But what I see right now in Rojava, especially as SDF and the other Kurdish parties came to some sort of intra-Kurdish consensus, this is going to be a helpful thing for the Kurds there, for them to face this challenge if at any point the United States withdraw from Rojava. So what I see today, the SDF, Mazlum Kobani, and the whole administration there are smarter than just putting faith into the partnership with the United States. They are trying to create a unity inside the Kurds and to be able to communicate with Syria, Syrian regime, with Russia, and also to have good relations with the Iraqi Kurdistan region. These are very important for the Kurds to be able to face that challenge whenever it comes.
That's interesting, because I was just thinking Rojava now has some echoes of the Kurdistan region of Iraq, which was secured by Peshmerga fighters and then led for years by Masoud Barzani, who transitioned from military figure to statesman. But in September 2017, of course, Barzani went too far. The Kurdistan region approved a referendum calling for independence, which was then rejected by Baghdad. Barzani stepped down, and people largely agree that the project for Kurdish independence and statehood suffered a real blow. There are a lot of differences, of course, between Syria and Iraqi Kurdish regions. But I wonder, Bastoun, do you see something similar happening in Rojava? Muslim Kobani has, much like Barzani, as you say, emerged as something of a global diplomat in recent months as Rojava has gained greater international sympathy.
Well, any Kurds living either in Iraqi Kurdistan or in Rojava, or in Turkey and Iran, if you ask them, would you like to live in a Kurdish independent state or no, the answer most probably is going to be yes. However, the geopolitics of Kurdistan is not helpful for Kurdish independence. This country is a landlocked country, and it is surrounded by four countries, Iraq, Iran, Turkey, and Syria, which the official policy and strategy of these four states is to not let the Kurds create an independent state. So I don't think that for a near future, a Kurdish state, not in Iraq nor in Rojava, is going to be possible. But this will remain as one of the main aims of the Kurd in the region, in the whole Middle East.
But it sounds like you're saying, because of how the Syrian Kurds are handling, the SDF and leadership is handling what's going on right now, you see like some maturation process there, some understanding of the difficulty of their position.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I think that they are much more experienced now, and they are mastering civil administration, because like they are fighters, basically. Muslim Kobani is a fighter. Trump always call him, and the Kurdish fighters are very good fighters. However, now right now they are leading a region, and they are getting more experience every day and mastering this. For sure, the example of Iraqi Kurdistan region is going to be helpful for them as well. But again, regarding to the independence, especially for Rojava, it's too early to talk about it.
Okay. Bastoun Khalid, Suleimani-based Kurdish journalist and analyst. It's been a real delight. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you very much for having me, and have a nice time.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.